This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Hey folks, welcome to the show. We've got a doozy for you today as we take a little inspiration from Clint Eastwood himself and set out to escape from Alcatraz. We'll take you through the history of the race and, more importantly, how to conquer it yourself when it's your turn to escape. Our guide to all things Alcatraz is legendary triathlete Eric Gilsonen. Eric has been a competitive triathlete for over three decades and has successfully escaped from Alcatraz 32 times. He's the announcer and historian for the Escape from Alcatraz event and is the host of the Beyond podcast sponsored by Ironman and Hoka. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And it's nice to be known for a great race like Alcatraz.
Also joining us today is Coach John Mayfield. John is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who leads TriDot's athlete services, ambassador, and coaching programs. He has coached hundreds of athletes, ranging from first-timers to Kona qualifiers and professional triathletes. John has been using TriDot since 2010 and coaching with TriDot since 2012. And John, you just made your first escape from Alcatraz yourself, so you only have to do the race 31 more times to catch up to Eric. Are you excited to chat about the race today?
Yes. Yeah, so this race is actually special. It combines two of things that I'm really into. Everybody knows I love triathlon, passionate about triathlon. But kind of oddly, one of my interests is prisons, especially old prisons, and Alcatraz is the Mecca. So to get to combine my interest and odd fascination with prisons with triathlon was amazing and super cool.
That's great.
Well, I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wind things down with our cool down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
I love it when athletes from the TriDot family send in a warm-up question, and we've got a great one today from Jillian from Washington State. When I opened this audio file for Jillian's question and listened to it, my wife was actually in the office doing a little work herself, so she heard Jillian's question and immediately said, "Ooh, that's a good one." So, Jillian, thanks so much for the question. You even got the Morgan Harley seal of approval. Let's see what she has us answering today.
Hi, Jillian Carlson from Fife, Washington. And I want to know if you have any pre-race or pre-assessment rituals or superstitions. With limited racing, I haven't yet developed a pre-race ritual, but before every assessment, I have to have freshly brushed teeth, no matter what time of day or how long it's been since I last brushed. I know I can't be alone in this. The more unique, the better. Thanks.
I also want to mention that Jillian made her first escape from Alcatraz this year as well. She had a great race. John and I saw her out there on the run course. So, Eric, before a race or a really important workout, do you have any game time habits or rituals?
Well, it's interesting that she's talking about brushing her teeth because about 35 years ago, there was a triathlete named Cliff Rigsby, and one of his things was to come off the bike in Kona and brush his teeth before
really?
He went out on the run. That was just Cliff Rigsby, but yeah, that was back in the day. My buddy Whit Raymond, a great announcer, he was famous for telling that story. I really don't. I don't have any real pre-superstitions, especially with Alcatraz. I'm working before I jump off the boat. So, always, I think, maybe just eat half my breakfast. You know, if I eat a whole bagel, I'll eat a half a bagel. If I drink two cups of coffee, I'll drink one. One goo, top it off. Nothing too traditional.
You've been out there so many years, been there, done that. You've got your flow. No superstitions. You just know what to do.
Not to make light of the intensity of it, but yeah, this year it was like on automatic pilot. It's just like, okay, I'm back here again. Just do, get through it and then do awards, you know?
Yep. Yep, that's the experience paying off there, Eric. That's what that is. So,
it's true.
Coach John Mayfield, what about you? Any pre-assessment or pre-race rituals that you do?
So I will say that brushing teeth in T2, especially after an Ironman, it does kind of make sense. if you've done it and you've been drinking sugary drinks for the last 5, 6, 7 hours out there on the bike, I get that. It makes sense because, we've talked about before on some of the others, so you get that palate fatigue, flavor fatigue, where you just don't want any other sugary sports drinks. But, yeah, you got to go run a marathon. So maybe there's something to that. I think that definitely checks out. For me, not so much rituals or routines, but every time I race, I do love to represent the great state of Texas. And I do so with my socks. So just this past weekend racing Alcatraz, I wore my Lone Star socks. Saw a couple other Texans out there on the course and was sure to give them a shout out. So I always try to wear my Texas themed socks out there on the race course.
Yep, I was running with John. John and I came off the bike at the same time, actually, and started the run together. And John, you actually heckled a girl wearing a University of Texas jersey. You had to let her know what you thought about that. But good point. I almost feel like going back to like the brushing your teeth thing. Like would it not be faster in transition to maybe just like do a quick hit of like Listerine or something, like some mouthwash, to keep going instead of taking like the full on time to brush your teeth? I don't know. That's just me. Just an idea for anybody who wants to do that. But for Jillian's case, she's doing it before her workout. She's brushing her teeth, mm-hmm. she goes into that assessment workout with a fresh mouth. So for me, my ritual, it's not really a superstitious thing. I just actually have. I have a favorite pair of socks. So John, kind of like you, I have a favorite brand of socks. I save my Wadi Inc socks for assessment day and for race day. And that just kind of like, when I throw those things on, it's just that mentality of like, oh, this is game time. Like this is, I'm going into it. I'm bringing the A game. I've got my favorite socks on. And it's partially just to preserve those socks. So don't like, wear holes through them or anything and then not have them on race day. But it's also just because there's just that like mental edge of almost like a swimmer, like shaving down before a swim meet. Instead of doing that, it's just putting my race socks on just kind of gets me mentally in that zone. But hey, guys, like we do every single Monday, we're going to take this warm-up question and throw it out to you guys. So make sure you are a part of the I Am Tri-Dot Facebook group. There are thousands of athletes that every single day are just talking swim, bike, and run in that group. So we will post this question to you, the listeners, today. Do you have a pre-workout or a pre-race ritual that you like to do? Can't wait to hear what you guys have to say.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
The whole team here at Tri-Dot has been learning from Oxford University professor Kieran Clark, founder and CEO of T Delta S Global, about the performance and health benefits of drinking the revolutionary Oxford ketone ester called Delta G. Professor Clark led the effort to develop Delta G, which is now available in 3 strengths: 10 grams for health, 25 grams for performance, and 32 grams of raw ester for that extra mile. Delta G is a powerful fuel that augments physical performance, sharpens mental acuity, and supports your metabolic health. I recently tried the Delta G 25 gram ketone performance drink for a 20-minute bike power test. With Delta G in my system, I averaged 4 watts higher than I was expecting with a lower heart rate than I typically have during an FTP session. I'm excited to continue using Delta G in my own race prep. So instead of worrying about running out of fuel at the most crucial time of your next event, try Delta G for yourself and gain the confidence that your Delta G drink can give you that wind at your back feeling all the way to the finish line. At DeltaGKetones.com, they even offer free 15-minute one-on-one consultations where you can learn more, ask questions, and receive a free bottle of Delta G with your order. So again, that's DeltaGKetones.com and use the code TRIDOT20 to get 20% off your Super Fuel Delta G ketone drinks. The Escape from Alcatraz Triathlon is a bucket list race for triathletes everywhere. It has a famous start, a unique course, and a picturesque destination location. From start to finish, it truly is a one-of-a-kind race. For the 2021 edition, the race is celebrating the 40th anniversary of athletes swimming, biking, and running their way through San Francisco to escape from Alcatraz Island. And our guest today has made more escapes than anyone else in history. With 32 successful escapes from Alcatraz, no one knows this race as well as Eric Gilson. And so, Eric, surely by now you've proven that you could escape if you ever got imprisoned on Alcatraz Island. How many times do you plan on doing this race?
I'm 56 going on 26.
All right.
And so I figure this was 32. Next year's 33. And that's a third of a century. I'd like to go because there are 70-year-olders finishing it. And I saw that this year because I was doing the awards and gave them those awards. I'd like to think 50 is possible. I started when I was 24. So when I'm 74, I'd do 50. So we'll see what happens. One year at a time. We have the Aquathon now, which is great. And hopefully listeners that might want to do the escape, step up and do the Saturday swim and run, and then do the whole classic on Sunday the following year. But we have two events now. So it's a long weekend. So by the time I'm going up the sand ladder, I've helped with athlete meetings, two events, and the awards awaits, but so does a pizza and a Coke and a nice chocolate chip cookie. So I have that going for me, which is nice. But if I was a prisoner on Alcatraz, I probably would have tried to escape. And who knows if I would have made it or not. But I've been doing it 32 years, and I've done the swim about 80 times, but did it in 89 as my first triathlon ever. And I did it actually 2 years in 95 or 96 when ownership was in question, who owned the event. And the two people put two events on. I did both to figure out which one was the best, but that's irrelevant. But I've done it for almost a third of a century at this point. 56% of my life.
Yeah, so just to be thorough, you did both races that year, just to make sure you weren't missing out on any Escape from Alcatraz event.
I wanted to see which one was the legitimate real one, and I figured it out, and I kept going year after year.
And hopefully that's the one that's still going. Hopefully the better one won out.
So, Eric, you know, you keep coming back every year for more, you know, and you're not alone in that regard. I mean, for many athletes, once they get a taste of this race, I mean, they just keep coming back to do it again and again and again. You know, so just kind of, you know, tell our listeners that they maybe aren't familiar with the ins and outs of what makes this race so special. I mean, what makes it so compelling that so many athletes do it year in and year out?
Sure, yeah. A woman that won her age group and is with Waterworld Swim, Kathy Winkler, she's been doing it for decades. Dwayne Franks, a coach out of Marin, he is former Golden Gate Triathlon Club president. He's been doing it for years. Steve Titan, you remember we all took the SAT test? He used to be like the treasurer of SAT. Steve Titan, he's done it for 20 years. Guy named not Larry Mandello from Leave It to Beaver, but Jerry Mandello from Florida. He has done it for 22 years, and he actually participated in 1985 in the first full Ironman in the domestic 48 states, which was put on by Dave McGilvery at Craigville Beach, called the Cape Cod Endurance-a-thon. That's how far back Jerry goes. He even goes back to Diet Coke Triathlon Series, which Tom Zebart put on with Freddie Rismick in Florida in the 80s. So Jerry's been around a long time. But then there's also Scott Crathcart, who has done it for 24 years in a row. And then there's also one guy that comes up to me, and he didn't this year because he didn't do it, but he comes up to me and he introduces himself and he says he's been doing it longer than me, but I don't know. I don't remember him. I don't know he's wearing the t-shirts. And the biggest thing is he's not giving back. You know, my first year was 89, and it was my first triathlon ever, but I was a pretty good swimmer out of the Coast Guard. And in 90, I called up the race director and I said, hey, what can I do to help? What can I do to maybe get a discount? So it was $100 back then. And the race director, Dave Horning, said, well, cut up the power bars, cut up the bananas, mix the Gatorade. You'll be an aid station captain. I'll give you an entry for $50. So the second year I worked it and I did it. And I kept doing that year after year, working it and doing it. So this was my 32nd year doing it, but it was my 31st year working it. And, you know, I suggest to people that do triathlons, if you are a triathlete, if you're just a recreational triathlete, okay, go and do one or two, and that's great. Keep coming back. But if you're a lifestyle person that does two or three or four, has that little M dot on the tattoo on the ankle or whatever, give back to the sport and be a volunteer. People say to me, hey, Eric, how do I become a better triathlete? Well, sometimes physically, mentally, spiritually, you've apexed and you got to plateau and be okay with that. And one way to advance to the next level is to be a volunteer. Then you get the operations end of triathlon. So you're just not an end user, consumer, taker. You're a giver. You're able to, you know, give back to the athletes. And that's absorbed swearing from customers, Gatorade, having your hands stick together so you can't even put your fingers apart. You know, you got so much gel and, you know, drink and all, and climb, you know, sweeping up cups and picking up trash and all that stuff. Being a volunteer, that gets you to the next level as well, because then when you're an athlete, then you may not litter as much, or you might thank the volunteers. And boy, you want instant karma, as Riley always says. You look those volunteers in the eye and say thank you, and it's instant karma out there.
So the guy that you didn't recognize but says he's done it over and over, his name isn't Frank Morris, is it? Or didn't claim to be Frank Morris?
No, the Anglin brothers or Frank. No, it wasn't them. But
not one of them.
I think they made it, though. I think they made it to Brazil. They sent,
you know, I
birthday card.
I always would kind of like to think that they did, but after having experienced that swim, I am highly confident they got sucked out into that ocean.
So John, this was your first crack at this race, and you've done a lot of different races. And after the race, John, you said to me, going into this race, I mean, on paper, it's kind of a pseudo Olympic distance race, right? It's kind of in between an Olympic and a 70.3. And John, you said to me, because you're training for Ironman Maryland, that's 30 something days away. And so you were like, I'm so glad I entered this race in Ironman shape, because that swim, you know, we had a tough day out there in the swim. The course is just so unique. So John, for you, you know, making your first escape, you know, did the race live up to the hype for you?
You know, I think I'm a bit of a tough one for that, just because I've been to so many amazing events. I'm pretty laid back. I don't get super excited about stuff. I'm not always super impressed with stuff. But man, I gotta say, this race absolutely, I would say, exceeded expectation. Such a cool event, from arriving in San Francisco to all the things leading into the race. Fantastic vibe. Even all the resources Eric and the crew provided in the weeks leading into the race were just first class. You show up at race day prepared, because it's very unique, both in the distance, the course itself, the logistics around it. But they do a fantastic job. So Eric, props for everything you and the crew did for that. Arrived at the race with a high level of confidence, knowing that there's a lot to do, but we know what to do and how to do it. And then, of course, all the personnel on the ground were fantastic as well. And then just the event itself was so unique. And like I said, I already have this intrigue around prisons. Every time I go to Northern California, which is about once a year, I go see Alcatraz. I've done the nighttime tours and the behind the scenes, just because it's that cool. But to get out there, ride a ferry out there, do a loop around the island prior to jumping off the boat, I was just so iconic, so cool. And then get to experience that. And then see just the, you know, I did one thing they talk about is roll over and take a look around, look back at the island. That was just surreal. And then roll over and look at the skyline of San Francisco. It was amazing. It was kind of hard to see the bridge. There was a whole lot of fog on Sunday morning, but you could kind of make out where it was. And man, that was just so cool. That's just not an experience I've had in any other race, of all the races that I've done. So very unique. And then just the beauty of Golden Gate Park, the difficulty of the climbing that is involved, you know, 1,000 feet of gain over 18 miles. Some of the descents were scary, and scary fast. And then just to see the beautiful ocean coming around, that there's one descent and a curve, and then you see the ocean and the beach. It was amazing. And then the run was so cool. Once again, having the privilege to get to race with you is always great. But man, just such a cool run course, with you can't get bored. 8 miles, I don't think has ever passed so quickly, just because it was something new around every corner. Literally, you mean you're running on a path and then a trail, and then you're running through an old fort, and then running through a tunnel and trying not to get decapitated because the exit of the tunnel is only about 4 feet high,
three and a half
onto the beach. And then, the famous,
sand ladder,
the sand stairs, and then just a super cool finish, second to none. So yeah, I got to say, the event just by far exceeded expectations. So yeah, it was so good. It was so fun. Fantastic experience. Great race.
I told my wife right after I finished and you know, exited the athlete area and got with her, I told her first thing, that was the wildest 3.5 hours of my life, because it absolutely was. No 3-ish hours in my life leading up to that compares. And I also told her there was not a moment on that course where you felt like you were racing a normal triathlon. You were always aware from, because you hear about the famous jump into the harbor, you hear about the whole ferry experience, you hear about the sand stairs. So there's certain iconic moments of the course you hear about, but literally every second from start to finish, I was always aware that I am on a different race course. I am on a special race course. I am doing a race that is very different and very special. You know, even some of the other best races on the circuit, you know, that there's moments where a road is just a road and a patch of sidewalk is just a patch of sidewalk. But the entire course, swim, bike, and run there in San Francisco, it just feels special. It feels different. And I had an absolute blast. So Eric, John and I mean, this obviously we're reflecting because this is our very, very first time experiencing this race. It was number 32 for you. How did your race go? Walk us through it.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me today. It's a privilege and an honor to talk to you guys and to pass on my passion, because I want everybody to do this race. I want everybody to do it. I've been lucky to just keep doing it. What if I didn't get out of the Coast Guard in San Francisco? What if I got another Coast Guard in Boston where I started?
Wow.
I'd probably be doing the Boston Marathon, but oh yeah, I'm still doing that too. But that's another podcast now, maybe in April. But yeah, I mean, to keep doing it and every year, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, doing it and working it and talking to the race directors afterwards and watching the race director and ownership change, but always having the passion. And, you know, our team with IMG, Jen Lau, Christian Dempster, Jim Eschhorn, Cynthia, she's having a baby, so she couldn't make it. But Bill Burke, he's been putting on races for 40 years. He's out on his bike today. You know, I ran today. I swam today. I'm going to ride my bike after this. I had an 11 o'clock meeting with Hoka, a company I work for. You know, we're all into it and we care. And, you know, that's why I put on the videos, is because after so many meetings before videos, like 10 years ago, I'd do meetings and I'd say at Sports Basement or wherever, when I put on my Escape Academies, does anybody have any questions? And if there were 100 people in the room, 100 people would answer.
I bet.
Yes, I have a question. And then after 6 or 8 questions, there aren't any more questions, because everybody's got the same questions: marine life, current, water temperature, and then maybe one on the bike or run. Yeah, maybe one about a sponsor or a goodie bag, but it's mainly all about the swim. So I said, hey guys, I'm repeating myself way too much. This is ridiculous. Let's get on the contemporary best practices. Let's get videos. So we had a USC film student help me, and we put on videos and we kept adapting them, and we send out Survey Monkeys afterwards, and we heard we want more swimming and sighting information. So it is true that Jeremiah O'Brien, the Fort Towers, Fort Mason, the piers of Fort Mason, the trees of Fort Mason, the Fontana Towers, all those things, you know, and people say, well, when do I know when to start turning? It's like, no, I think gravity, the moon, and all that will take care of you. That'll pull you out. But yeah, after all the questions, I just thought we have to have these videos. And then we did the videos. And what's cool about this year's race is how many people recognize me from the videos.
Wow.
And what an honor and privilege it is to be known for this race. This is a classic race. You know, in cycling, there's Flèche Wallonne, Paris-Roubaix, one-day classics, and we are it. You know, we are not, we're a modified Olympic distance. You know, we are what the city gives us. But it's a classic event. It's been going on for years, no matter what the course. It's always been different. Every year, it's just a little bit different. It's never the same. So, you know, the event for me this year went quite well. The newsletters and the videos went out, and the swim was tough. You know, one of my jobs is to set the tides, somebody else that sets the tides, but I look at the tide charts and see which weekend is going to be the best. And we always want a high tide that's around 2:30, 3:30, 4:30, 5:30, so that it's pulling out at 7:30 when we jump off the boat. And so this weekend, and I've set them for the next few years, it's all based on tide charts, which I'm familiar with from being in the maritime industry all my life. You know, both my parents were naval officers, so I grew up on the ocean and was in the Coast Guard. And so, you know, all these things considered, I thought, okay, this is a great swim day, August 15th. And it was, you know, but we had a good, you know, a couple knot tide pulling out, 1.7 miles per hour per knot. And then we had a nice little wind coming from the west. So they sort of nullified each other because we had the tide going east to west and the chop going west to east. So that added some. And yeah, Ben Canute, a guy, he and his wife have homestayed here in Napa many times, them. And he came up to me right after. He's like, Eric, tell me about this swim. What happened, man? I was 10 minutes off from last year, or the year before. I was like, no problem, man, no problem. You know, but a lot of people, age groupers on social, were very relieved to get that feedback from Ben Canute. He's a great guy. And, you know, they felt better because it was such a choppy swim.
So, Eric, I'm going to be 100% honest with you in talking about the swim. I actually really kind of like choppy water. I don't know. To me, it makes it fun to swim in choppy water. Uh-huh. So I enjoyed that. Yeah. I don't know why, Eric, but I got it in my head. Like, I know tens and thousands of people swim in that bay every year. Tens of thousands of people have done this race. You said yourself, you swam in that bay over 80 times. But for whatever reason, I had it in my head that sharks were out there, and I knew, I was like, you know what? No one's ever gotten attacked. I'm 100% going to be safe. Like that is not going to be a problem on race day. But I just knew it was in my head. I'm like, I'm going to get in that water, and that's all I'm going to be thinking about. And so I honestly didn't worry about sighting. I didn't worry about which direction I was swimming. I made my entire goal for the swim was to stick with somebody else. And so I kind of just like hopped from other swimmer to other swimmer, just making sure, because just as long as I was with somebody else, I felt safe. So I don't remember worrying about the chop. I don't remember worrying about the tides and what was going where. I was just worried about staying with somebody else. So I felt like I wasn't going to get eaten by a shark, and I didn't. So, you know, in the end it worked. I had a blast with the swim. And I've told so many triathlete friends, you got to do this race, even if you do it just once, because it's absolutely worth it. So Eric, we've talked a lot about the race, and we'll talk a little bit more about it, but before we close today, but I just kind of want people to hear for a moment, just kind of your story and kind of your past in triathlon, you know, but before you were addicted to jumping off of a ferry into San Francisco Bay with 2,000 of your closest friends, you know, you had an alcohol addiction that you're very open about having wrestled with. Tell us a little bit about that battle with alcohol and the role that running specifically played in your recovery.
Sure. And I always bring a friend with me to swim. And it's usually my buddy who used to play for the Oakland Raiders. He's a lineman. He's now a security guard.
Oh,
he's
cool.
Like 300 pounds. So when I swim with him, I figure the shark's going to get my big buddy Steve instead of me. They'll get a bite out of Steve instead of a skinny, bitter old man like me. They'll spit me out. No. Hey, thank you. Yeah, you know, when I was 14, I started, and it just in my Irish blood, I just know it from genetics and past family members. It's just not a good thing for me to drink. Some people can, some people can't. Has nothing to do with guts, because if it had to do with guts, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing with Alcatraz.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if anybody ever challenges me, it's like, oh, well, you want to, you know, let's go do Alcatraz instead of shots. Let's see how badass you are after, you know, that. Yeah, I was. I went to 14 years old, and then I went for 10 years. 24 years old, I stopped drinking. I went 10 years hard. I puked in class in high school. I went out and drank French fries, and I had French fries and Jack Daniels for lunch, and had a joint for dessert. That sounded like a good idea. And I puked in class after running into class. You know, Jack Daniels French fries. That went over well on the hardwood of the desk. And then the teacher let it sit over weekend because it was Friday last period. And first thing I had to do Monday morning was go back to class, psychology, of course, clean the desk, and then go into in-school suspension. And that was, you know, there's your sign. Nope, didn't affect me. I just kept going. I went to spring break for 1 week, and I thought, my God, you know, you can drink from 6 a.m. to 3 a.m., and, you know, you've got beach and lifeguard. You know, life is great. So Daytona Beach, I stayed 4 years. It was the first year MTV went from Fort Lauderdale to Daytona. They had worn out their welcome in Fort Lauderdale down south, so they went a couple hundred miles north to Daytona. And I ended up working, you know, for MTV and at the beach, and, you know, lifeguarding, and every job I had, I got, you know, fired from because I was, you know, drunk and using all the time. And then I went into the Coast Guard, and I lasted a couple of years, and I was good, underway. I was qualified with small arms, big arms. I was a good shot. I could, you know, hit anything at the range. I'd be the first one picked to go on boardings on Russian vessels, Japanese vessels all over the Bering Sea, helicopter ops. I'd be, either refueling or I'd be up on the helo. I was good underway, but give me liberty. And that's where I was a nightmare. And, one day I brought a half gallon of tequila on board, and I drank most of it underway and ended up brushing my teeth. And speaking of brushing your teeth, holy Toledo, this is ironic. Every time I did a shot of tequila, I would brush my teeth so I wouldn't get busted with alcohol in my breath. But I passed out on the flight deck, and there was no denying that. I went to the hospital 0.354 on duty January 28th, 1988 on the Broadway Pier in San Diego while the Redskins were beating the Broncos a drum. And life was just a nightmare, and I got kicked out of the Coast Guard, and I was basically homeless because I didn't have an address.
Wow.
That still wasn't my sign. I kept going hard. I lived in a car. I had $100 Plymouth Valiant. I lived in a boarding house in Alameda for $185 a month. And second month I couldn't pay rent. I was in my car, and I'd have to sneak in at night and not have the lights on because the landlord was my neighbor, and he'd see the lights on and come knocking for his rent. Life was just a mess. And I just, hit bottom, and I started to run and lose weight. And a buddy of mine in the recovery group said, hey, as these things, triathlons, you should try it. And on a dare, I did it in 89. And I did. And he said, if you do it, I'll pay for it. He never paid me back, but that's okay. It was a good investment. It was only $100. It was first year in 89, and I didn't know anybody. I did not know anybody in 89. And I met a guy named Paul Huddle. And Paul Huddle right now is the Southwest director for Ironman. And he's married to Paula Libby Frazier, Norman Paul Huddle from Arizona. And he is still, I talked to him this morning. He's one of my best friends and oldest friends in the industry. And it's about relationships, and I knew no one back in 89. And you know what? On Saturday and Sunday, I consider every one of you that earned the medal the coach has behind him, the t-shirt you have on, the jacket I have on, we all earned it. You are all my friends. It's like when you get in the elevator with someone that's got the M dot tattoo or a chain that has the M dot on it. That's a fraternity. That's a sorority. That's a group. Less than 1% of the world's population has ever done a marathon, let alone an Ironman or Alcatraz. So it's less than 1% of the world's population since Adam and Eve, if that was the case, or cavemen. So, it's a very small group of us. So, you're my friend. Everyone's my friend. And everyone's a triathlete. They just don't know it yet. And that's a line from my podcast. But, I just love it. And what I want is everyone to feel the inclusive love of the finish line. It's what brings us all together. I want everyone to feel that sense of accomplishment so that they can equate it to a peer pressure or being cut off on the highway or a job interview or some life lesson that triathlon and endurance athletics can, and the discipline of it, can teach you, and how to be resourceful and how to dig deep and how to, pull more out of your body than you knew was there, and the potential that we all have. I just love being able to turn sweat into money for others, serve others, help others, find out more about yourself. Years ago, a friend of mine, or a young kid at the pool, where my son now is an All-American swimmer going to the University of Hawaii next year. And, when he was 8 years old, and I'd bring him to the pool every day because he had to go to the pool. So I'm like, okay, let's go. We met these lifeguards. And my wife at the time was a twin. And when you marry a twin, you almost married to the twin, And so there were these twins at the pool, and one was a pool director and one was a lifeguard. And so the pool director did some home economics senior class project, but Lacey wanted to do a triathlon for a senior class project. So I said, okay, well, let's do Alcatraz. So the mother hated the idea. I always had, someone with me when I trained the kid, And so I gave her a wetsuit, gave her an entry. She had done one mini sprint triathlon before. At 18 years old, there were six people in the 18 to 24 year old age group. She got sixth in her age group. She finished the race. She put her goggles on because she was crying on the boat. She filled her goggles up halfway with tears, and she was waiting for me. to jump off, but I had jumped off the boat already.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, she was captain of her swim team, so she could swim quite well. Then she got off the swim, and she got on the bike, and she got on the run. But she finished. And her mother never liked the idea of this. But on race day, for the first time ever, the mother said, hey, you know, I think this is really cool. This is awesome. Well, something happened that day to the mother. She watched her daughter finish the escape from Alcatraz. Now the mother's 50 pounds lighter. I see her every year at the Thanksgiving run, and she gives me a big hug and a kiss, and she, you know, just reminds me of what an impact I made on their family, because the kid wrote me a letter saying, hey, you provided me a link to my mother that I never had before. And then the twin sister comes up to me a month later and says, hey, can you train me to be a triathlete so I can have a relationship with my mother like my sister does? Oh, yeah, that's real. So it's like swim, bike, run, have fun, but so much more happens out there. It's like Dave McGilvery says, yeah, it's the Boston Marathon, but it's so much more. You know, helping people is just the best, no matter what it is, whether it's raising money for Pat Tillman Foundation, Best Buddies, Team in Training, one of the old philanthropics of endurance. But, you know, it's that just helping others and getting them to the finish line. And days like Sunday make me remember how many friends I have. And luckily through the videos, the IMG has given me the opportunity to be the face of that I can affect that many people's lives. And I was at mile 7, and as a woman, you know, was running, she's like, are you the guy from the race? Are you the guy from the videos? I'm like, yeah. And she says, thank you so much for caring about this race. Yeah. That's what she opened up with. She said, thank you so much for caring about this race. I said, you can tell? She said, yeah, I can tell. And then she comes up, I'm doing awards, and she won her age group. And I said, are you the one that was talking to me at mile 7? She's like, yeah. So, you know, it's friends like that. And like, you know, Steve Titan and Jerry Mandello and Kathy Winkler, and seeing people back year after year after year. It's just great. And it's Alcatraz. It's one and done. It's one off. We had a series. We had Beijing. We had different qualifying races. Hey, it works for Ironman. It didn't really work well for Xterra. But, you know, hey, it is what it is. And it's just a great race. And we're looking forward to producing it for the next as long as San Francisco will have us back. And we hope that it was a good race for everyone in the city. And I just can't say enough for it. You're able to finish it and be at lunch at about lunchtime instead of, you know, when you're doing the 70.3 of the fulls, you know, the day's gone. But it's something you can bring friends to. It's it's fun. I love it.
So hey, John, Eric, I'd love to hear from both of you guys here. Because Eric, obviously you're so experienced with this course. You know, John, as you know, one of our top coaches, I mean, you just absorb things so quickly. A lot of athletes, they have this as a bucket list race. They want to do this race. They want to get their name in that lottery and hope it gets drawn and travel to San Francisco, hop off the boat, do the whole thing. You know, so for athletes that have this on their bucket list, you know, what are your training tips for being ready to head into this race and have a successful day?
Okay. Well, definitely check out the escapefromalcatraztry.com website to find out when the lottery is going to open up again. I think it's September 1st, but check that out on escapefromalcatraztry.com. Definitely check out the videos and the newsletters. You know, they're there for a reason. I don't waste my own time. I don't waste my own money. I take care of my time. I take care of my money, and my time and money takes care of me. And the same thing is for everybody that I want to involve with this race. If it's out there on a newsletter, it's not fluff. It is all content, and it's stuff that, wouldn't you guys agree, newsletters are good?
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of people just blow it off, you know, but it's like, hey, it's real. And I can tell when people ask me questions on Friday or Saturday before the race, you didn't watch the newsletter. You didn't read the newsletter. You didn't watch the video, did you? No, I didn't. And actually, sometimes I've just said, go watch the video, and they get upset at me. But if they watch the video, they'll get the answer, and they'll be able to repeat it. I would say cold swimming, ocean swimming, but also neck up, understand. Yeah, you've got to navigate, but there's not too much difference in between the pool and the bay. But, you know, it's neck up. It's mental. The bike, you know, getting out of your saddle in a spin class, climbing a lot. And then on the adaptive for the gym, training with Alcatraz in the winter or at a site that's not conducive outside. Sometimes the stair stepper, you know, up down, stair going it forward and backwards because of the sand ladder, and doing maybe a spin class and then doing the stair stepper for 10 minutes and then finishing things off with a treadmill, or, you know, doing a treadmill and then a Stairmaster and then a spin class and finish off the bike. So you're not pounding at the end of your workout, easier on your legs when to spin out at the end. But adaptive training, definitely. Open mind, doing what you said, you know, it's in Peter Butler, one of the original race directors. And, I, you know, want to talk about the original race directors. Peter Butler used to say, whether it's in the water or on the Golden Gate Bridge, turn around, look to your left, look to your right, and know that you're in between the rock and a hard place.
Absolutely. So John, having been through the race one time yourself, you know, as Coach John Mayfield, what would you tell your athletes if they were preparing to head into this race?
It's definitely a power event, where oftentimes we're focusing on stamina in triathlon, especially those focusing on those long course events. We know how critical power is in those stamina events as well. But this really is a power event. As we mentioned, the swim was tough with the current going one way, the chop on top of the water going the other. It's a power event just to power through. Having proficient open water skills was critical. There are some events that you can somewhat kind of fake it, where, you know, if you're in a very inland protected lake or something like that, you know, it's not that different from the pool. But when you get out there, you jump off the boat, you hit that cold water, you experience that fight or flight reaction. You need to be able to handle that. And then you need to have those skills to control yourself and to get out of the water. One thing that's unique is there are two buoys on the entire course, and those buoys are on boats, so that you can see them. It took me probably halfway through before I actually saw the buoy, and it's like, oh, that's that buoy they were talking about on top of the boat. Okay, so it was very comforting to know I was somewhere in the right place. But yeah, you jump off this boat and you're using the San Francisco skyline as your sighting. So having good sighting skills is critical. So again, having that power, you're fighting against a very strong current that is trying to take you out into the ocean. So yeah, you got to have good proficiency there. The bike is over 1,000 feet of gain. I think it's actually closer to 1,500 feet of gain, over 18 miles. There are very little flat sections. When I say that, it's like half a mile out of 18 miles is flat. So really it's working on power on the bike and having that ability to climb. And this is something that's a common mistake. I live on the Texas Gulf Coast. It is completely flat. I did not ride any hills in preparation for this event, but I still able to focus my training on building power, and power is power. So I didn't climb a single hill. I didn't do a single workout, you know, with more than 100 feet of elevation gain. And I'm like you mentioned earlier, I'm prepping for Ironman. So I'm doing 100-mile rides with 200 or 300 feet of elevation gain. We did that in 1 mile in the Alcatraz course. But being able to focus on that power and have that high FTP, I was able to climb the hills. So you don't necessarily have to go ride those hills in order to prepare for a race like this, but you do have to really focus on building your power as opposed to your stamina. And then same thing on the run. The course is you're on pavement for maybe a couple hundred yards at best. Then it converts to trails. You're going uphill, you're going up concrete stairs, you're going up sand stairs, you're running on the beach. And one thing that kind of surprised me was how heavy that sand was. It was very loose. Man, it was tough to get through. Again, that's where power on the run comes in, and you've got to be able to power through that. So that's really where all those things come in, that it truly is a power event. So the higher you can build those thresholds, the better you're going to be, and the more fun, the more you're going to be able to enjoy, that Alcatraz experience.
Yep. So the one thing I'll add, John, is I would encourage people to, okay, you want to do Alcatraz, you want to go into that race, knowing it takes some power, knowing it's a little bit different. I would also start incorporating some back and core into your routine. Just a couple times a week, you know, 15, 20 minutes, you know, maybe you get off the bike from that bike workout, you get done with that run workout, spend 15 minutes, you know, doing some planks, doing some core work. That was the first thing to really start wearing out for me. I was on the bike, and just between fighting the bay water and coming up to sight and, you know, being on the bike, climbing those hills, I don't think I've ever in any of my half marathons, any of my sprints Olympics I've done before, I've never noticed my lower back. I've never noticed my core muscles breaking down But I was halfway through the bike leg, and I could feel those muscles were overworked. They were at their limit. They were like, hey, we're not in Texas anymore. and so I would just encourage people to maybe hit those abs, hit those core workouts a little bit more going into this race. So that way, when you are maybe out of your element, going up some San Francisco hills, you know, doing some trail running that you're not used to doing, you've got the core to support, you know, your lungs to support the rest of your body. So I would say that. Another thing that I would say, and I'll kind of use this to transition us into our next question. So I actually, and John's aware of this, some of our Tri Dot users are aware of this. Eric, you're hearing this for the first time. I jumped in the San Francisco Bay, and luckily where John and I jumped in, John jumped right after me. We were right by the camera where the live feed was, where people could watch athletes jumping in the water. And so I've gone back and watched the live feed, and I jumped in, and immediately upon making contact with the water, my timing chip just obliterated and fell off my leg. And you can see it. You can see it floating away in the water, away from me as I take off swimming. I became aware of it about 2 miles into the bike, when we kind of started to go up the first hill. I just went to kind of glance down and make sure I was in the small chain ring but before I started shifting some gears. And that's when I noticed I did not have a timing chip. And I was like, my first thought, I immediately thought, anybody from TriDot who is tracking me right now is going to think that I drowned in the bay because my timing chip is going to register that I'm in the bay. And sure enough, it was 12 hours after the race. I looked it up. My timing chip was still counting up as if I was still out there swimming somewhere in the bay. And about 13 hours after the race, it finally transitioned to saying that I did not finish. After the race, I wasn't worried about it. I knew I was going to finish in the middle of the pack. I knew I wasn't out there to podium. So I went to the timing officials. I showed them my watch. They wrote down my splits. And now if you go and look up me, I'm there. And my splits are there. They're just from my watch. So the race officials took good care of me. I wasn't worked up about it. But I'll say this. So my race day tip is, hey, whether it's a safety pin, you know, it is an intense swim. You are jumping from a ferry into the water, you know, so safety pin that timing chip, you know, make sure when you come out of the water, make sure when you're taking off that wetsuit that it's still there before you go about the rest of your race. But for you guys, and Eric, we'll start with you and then we'll go to John. What is a mid-race tip that you would give for people just to have a successful race once they're out there?
Sure. And yeah, Scott Langford, I can't say enough about him. Trinity timing, stays calm, doesn't get rattled, and always has the athlete's back. I would say a midway swim, bike, and run would be, there's equal need for anxiety and fear and respect for what you're doing. And it's quite an undertaking to do the escape from Alcatraz, because if you're in Lake Placid or Coeur d'Alene and you don't make the swim cutoff, you're in a lake. If you're in Panama City and you don't make the bike cutoff, it's pretty flat.
Yeah.
It's okay. You can roll home, go by the Waffle House, say hello, get everything smothered and covered. But at Alcatraz, at the swim, if you stop swimming, you can end up at the Farallones like your timing chip.
Uh-huh.
And on the bike, if you don't know how to ride a bike, you're going to end up on Seal Rock, you know, that where, you know, the coach was saying, you come around the ocean and you see that's in a cliff house. And if you don't make up that 0.8-mile climb from Balboa and the Great Highway to the VA hospital, I literally, as I was riding by, were out of their, you know, pedals, click, 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 up the hill. Hey, man, whatever it takes to get there, get there. But particularly, and a sand ladder. No one's going to help you. There's no ski lift there. There's no little, rope tow or anything like a mountain, ski mountain. So basically, yeah, the swim, the bike, and the run can leave you stymied, you know, senseless, directionless. You can't move. So, yeah, I mean, I would say that you got to take it as a serious undertaking, but it's like high school. Be accountable. Be responsible. If you studied, you know you're going to get an A or a B or do your best. I've never entered into a test knowing, oh, geez, I hope I get an A. I didn't study for an A. I studied for a C, so I got a C. You get what you study for. So if you do the same thing and take accountability, the swim, as long as you listen, I mean, I nailed the swim this year, and that's because I listened to the damn videos. And you know what? I guess I had something to do with that. The Fontana Towers, the trees of Fort Mason, the piers of Fort Mason, the tower, you know, that I, the dome of the Palace of Fine Arts. the Golden Gate Yacht Club, the Red Roof of the St. Francis Yacht Club. There they were. I nailed the swim. I didn't overswim, but yet I did 2.1 on my swim. I swam 38.28, 3,828 yards, won 2.1 miles. A lot of other people overswam as well. You know, I didn't overswim in, you know, the actual point to point, but my arm swings, you know, how many turnovers did I have? So, you know, the biggest thing is you got to do your homework, but don't mentally screw yourself. I remember like my sixth year, I was videotaped crying. Why do I do this? Oh my God, I pay for this. And I was having a mental weakness, a moment. And that was brought on by myself. And it's like, no, don't screw yourself. Positive. It's like what I read on the boat, and I hope that these things make a difference. You know, think positive. Your mind believes what you tell it. So why not fill it with positive thoughts as you're racing? Believe in yourself. If you've trained hard and get yourself into good shape, you will be able to race to your potential. If you've done your homework, you will do your best. Imagine what it's like to cross the finish line. Visualize all those things that I said in the pre-race meetings and on the boat. You know, neck up stuff. When it comes to Alcatraz, you can do this. If you do the homework, you know, you can do it. And so the biggest thing is don't mentally screw yourself. Listen to the videos, listen to others, and you can make it. Because I saw people out there on Sunday who look a lot different than in 89. You know, the sport's growing, and I love it. I want everybody. So, you know, oh, I can't do that. Yeah, you can. You can do it. You just got to be accountable. And for this particular triathlon, I'm not saying any other triathlon. I'm saying this particular race, the newsletters and the videos are spot on.
Yeah.
If they weren't, we'd do it again. And we have revised the videos to accommodate the changes in the course or the changes in best practices of the sport.
Yeah. One thing I found very helpful. I remember the newsletter and the video that went out talking about the bike course. It even gave us recommendations on here are the parts of the course where you will most likely be able to take in water and nutrition.
Thank you very much.
And they were right because when you're bombing down hills with a corner coming up, that's not really the time to reach for your bottle. And so I was able to kind of keep in mind, okay, this is where Eric told me to take my bottle of nutrition, and I was able to drink accordingly. Something else that really...
Golden Gate Park.
Yeah, exactly. That before and after. And something else that John and I talked about doing that I did every single time I went to the pool leading up to this race after I'd registered. You go to the pool's edge and you get your goggles on, you kind of take 2 or 3 minutes to work your nerve up to jump into the chilly water. I like both of us, we said, okay, we're not going to let ourselves do that. We're going to put our goggles on. We're going to put our swim caps on. We're just going to jump in because on race day, we're just gonna have to jump in. And then when I would be swimming in the pool, I would just a visualization. I was trying to picture the bay. I was trying to picture every time I would come up and breathe to the right in the pool, I was trying to picture the Golden Gate Bridge being on that side. And I was trying to picture the other bridge being on the left side and just trying to put myself mentally in that position before I ever even got there. And that's something that I did that I think really helped me in my race. John, what are a couple things having raced it that you would tell athletes once you get out there on course, these are some tips to really executing the race well?
Well, just kind of echoing off of what Eric said, it's about that preparation. And I think perhaps one of the best tips, and I was even a little reluctant with this one because I love my time trial bike so much. And I know I'm so much faster on my time trial bike. But Eric said, leave your time trial bike at home. As sexy and as cool as it is, leave it at home. And I got off that bike and I said, man, I can't imagine doing that on my time trial bike. I was so glad that I had a road bike to do that, just for the ability to climb, the ability to descend, the technical aspects of it, having the road bike to do that. I was just, yeah. So Eric, thanks for that. I was really glad I listened to that. That is probably, I would say almost the number one tip is borrow, rent, do what you got to do to have a road bike for that. You're going to be happy. And then I would almost say number two would be, and I didn't have this, but I wish I did. I wish I had trail shoes. So I went just in my regular running shoes, but I think I would have perhaps not a major thing, but I think it just would have been a little bit better had I had trail shoes, because again, as I mentioned, there's very little that's on pavement, and then just running across the beach, up the sand ladder, all those would have been perhaps just a little bit better equipped with some trail shoes.
Yeah, but I certainly didn't take my race day Nike Vaporflies. I took my more beat up, you know, day to day workout shoes, you know, and definitely didn't regret that. And what's funny, John, you talk about, you know, renting, borrowing, or bringing your road bike. I mean, you know, between you, me, and Tri-Dot coach Jeff Rains, who also raced this race for the first time, you know, you borrowed one, I brought my road bike, and then Jeff rented a road bike. So all three of us literally, you know, took Eric's advice and made sure we had a road bike for the race, and definitely didn't regret it. We had one Tri-Dot user, we had one Tri-Dot athlete who was out there who had a mechanical with his bike and couldn't shift from the big ring to the small ring, and literally was able to do the entire race in the big ring. And I would have been walking up the hills myself if that had been me, but that was
impressive. Yeah.
So shout out to him. But Eric, just to kind of land the plane on our main set here today, you know, lots of good content about Alcatraz, lots of stories and history and just encouragement and reasons why people should do this race. So for anybody who is looking to do this, you know, who's interested in it, what's kind of the information they need to know about trying to get into this race for next year?
Sure. You know, I've done the numbers, over 50 miles of the swim, 600 on the bike, 290 on the run over 32 years.
Incredible.
I keep coming back and accumulating those times because I love it. And I want everyone, like I said many times, I want everyone to feel that finish line. I would say, you know, check out the website, start training. You can do it. It's something that can lead to more and bigger things. A lot of people do it once and say, I'll never do it again. And then the next week they're calling their buddies saying, are you going to sign up? And they do. And they do it again. And they keep coming back. And then they keep bringing friends. So, you know, it's something that, you know, is worth doing, if not 30 times, at least once. And, you know, if it wasn't all that, I wouldn't be coming back year after year. If it wasn't life changing for me annually, and it's not so much life changing for me personally, but when I can help others change their life and then they give me a report back, you know, this was what happened. That's great. So, yeah, just be persistent, try out the lottery. And we had a lot of family racing together. Ben Canute and his dad raced. I saw a lot of father-daughter racing together. So, you know, a lot of it's a family bonding. And it's not, you know, the distance of the half Ironman. That's 70.3 miles. You know, it's quite an undertaking. You know, a lot of people jump in and will do a half. But, you know, man, at least with Alcatraz, you know, do a sprint, get a race under your belt. But it's definitely it's something that will help you, I think, in every aspect of your life if you allow it.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
For our cool down today, I want to take just a few moments to explore Eric Gilsonen, the podcaster. I love seeing other endurance podcasts do well. It just means folks are engaging in the sport that we all love so much. Now, Eric is the co-host of the Hoka and Ironman Beyond podcast, where he and professional triathlete Chelsea Sodaro interview all sorts of folks from the triathlon industry. There are a lot of podcast listening hours in the week, and my hope is that the Tri-Dot podcast will fill one of those hours for you, and then a show like Eric's can fill another one of those hours for you. So, Eric, just for our listeners today who maybe aren't familiar and are looking for a new podcast to check out, what can they expect to hear when they tune into you guys?
Sure. Thank you. One of the cooperative marketing programs that Hoka, one of the companies I represent, and Ironman, another company I represent, we've done is the Humans of Hoka videos. And with those videos that great director Mike O'Neill put together with his team, we were able to get a lot of content. And then with COVID, we thought, well, we've got all this content and video, let's maybe try to put it into podcasts. And so we did with some voiceovers. And now we've done live interviews. And so we've been able to interview like Chelsea, because she ran track at Cal, she ran a 4:30 mile. She raced in the Diamond League as a professional runner until injury got her into triathlon. I believe Chelsea's going to do real well. She showed up to Ironman Santa Rosa on Friday, pre-race meeting in Hoka's, before she was sponsored by Hoka, and I was the race announcer for Ironman Santa Rosa, 70.3. She won on Saturday, outrunning Paula Findlay and Rinny.
Wow.
Rinny went up to her and said, "Who are you? I've never heard you from you before. You're going to be great." And then on Sunday, she came to Iron Kids to help out, and she was wearing another pair of Hokas. So three different days, three different Hokas. She wasn't sponsored by me before. I knew she was going to do real well. That year, she got fourth in Nice at 70.3 Worlds. I sponsored her the next month and have ever since. And I thought, what a great person to have on with me for the podcast. And yeah, the podcast now, I've actually tapered to Chelsea focusing on women's issues, and I'm working with people like Scott Tinley, and we've got a Dave McGilvery podcast coming out soon. So I'm working with some of the classic people that have been around a longer time. We've got Morgan Lattimore, a retiring Marine, coming in. He's got quite a following on the East Coast. Great man. So we're, you know, diversifying. So the podcast, we just want everyone to swim, bike, run, have fun, feel the feeling that you, Andrew, and John, you know, share with each other and other clients, and your, you know, coaching routine, and getting people back into the game of life. And so, yeah, we just hope the podcast help others get motivated, and we want to tell stories. You know, I'm Irish, you know, Riley, we're Irish, you know, the Irish didn't write things down. We were, you know, there was a guy called the Limerick, and he would go from county to county and tell what village was going on down the village. And so they never write anything down, but they were talkers. So we're just talkers, you know, and so we just want to pass stories on.
Well, very cool. Well, just like an athlete doesn't have to train with Tridot to listen to the Tridot podcast, you don't have to run in Hokas or compete in Ironman events to listen to Eric and Chelsea on the Beyond podcast. Here is a fun clip of Eric from the Beyond podcast.
Welcome to the Chelsea and Eric show. Eric, so great to be here with you.
We have an unbelievable interview today. I met him years ago, and he's just a regular guy. He is just a regular cool guy, but he happens to be the 2004 IndyCar Series champion as well as a legend, Tony Kanaan. We both did 1240s in Kona. You in 2011, me in 2002. So I think maybe next year we got to both race at Kona again. How about that?
I agree. Let's do it. I you know, the most depressing part of my Kona experience was the banquet the next day. I sat there watching all the age groupers and getting their, you know, their awards, and sitting me and my wife, and we looked age group from 70 to 75. I would have finished fifth with my time. So I told Lauren, I said, if I keep doing the same time until I'm 75, I'll finish in the top five.
Business.
We got hope.
Going home with some hardware. And are there any other endurance events that you'd like to do outside of triathlon? Or is Kona, are you really just all in on Kona?
No, I did Kona in 2011. I would love to do the Race Across America one day. I would love to do that. Get a team and just get in a motorhome and just go for days, hating life but loving life at the same time. That is something that I will do. Obviously, I need time.
I think you got two teammates right here. And Chelsea, my goodness, the way she rides it. Oh, Lord, we're going to win. We're going to win.
Are you in?
Yeah,
are you guys
in?
Let's
do it. I need a couple years before we do that project, but I'm in.
Me too. Let's plan now for a couple of years, and we'll get it done.
Team time to fly.
We'll do it.
Nice.
Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank Eric Gilsonen for sharing his story and talking all things escape from Alcatraz with us today. And thanks to Coach John Mayfield for joining the conversation as well. A big thanks to Delta G for partnering with us on today's episode. Head to DeltaGKetones.com to learn more about fueling with the Delta G Performance Ketone Ester. And remember, you can use promo code TRIDOT20 for 20% off your Delta G order. Enjoying the podcast? Have any triathlon questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Head to tridot.com/podcast and click on leave us a voicemail to get your voice asking a question on our show. We'll have a new show coming your way soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.